From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today on the show, we look at how the COVID-19 pandemic may affect Wisconsin's county budgets. Then, while addiction treatment and recovery has drastically changed due to social distancing, it's also opened up more opportunities to connect.
Reach out to any organization that you look up. You know, there's plenty of rooms and plenty of conversations. Recovery is universal. You know, it's not limited to just your area.
And we hear from two organizations helping artists get through this pandemic, creatively and financially.
It's almost like air to us, right? And I think in that way, we often forget about how important it is until it's a moment like this, right? When we don't have access. And I think having a really frank conversation about what this arts and culture community means to our state after COVID-19, I think is really, really important.
Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. The true economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic is still unclear. Unemployment is extremely high, dwarfing previous records. Small businesses are struggling to survive, and the stock market has been vacillating between extreme lows and highs. Locally, people are concerned about what this is going to mean for themselves, their loved ones, and our community. Rob Henkin, president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum, has been analyzing how this pandemic may impact local budgets. He joins me now to talk about the forum's report, aptly titled The COVID-19 Fiscal Fallout for Counties. Rob, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thanks for having me, Joy.
So frequently, I feel like we end up talking about Wisconsin's odd tax structure as being a major impediment, particularly in Milwaukee County. But right now, it seems that it's actually set us up to be a bit more successful than other states during this, you know, very strange time. Let's start here. How do Wisconsin counties compare to other counties when it comes to their revenue streams?
So Wisconsin counties, when we look across the nation, clearly have more dependence on property tax and on revenues from the state of Wisconsin than most typical urban counties, and less reliance on other revenue sources, including sales taxes. And you're absolutely right. In ordinary times, we would probably consider that to be a detriment, that having such considerable reliance on just two major revenue sources is really something that can be a disadvantage. In an ideal world, you're going to have a more diversified revenue portfolio. In this case, because those two revenue sources on which counties depend are relatively stable, and we really have to emphasize the word relatively here, it's actually an advantage for counties in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you know, you said we really have to emphasize the word relative here. And of course, one of the ways that we get a lot of our revenue in counties throughout the state is through state aid. So when we're looking at how the pandemic is impacting that kind of aid, what are we looking at?
Well, so much of this is still speculative, Joy. I think first and foremost, there's a state budget that, of course, has already been enacted. It's a two-year state budget. And so in ordinary times, this would be a year of relative stability because the state dollar amounts in terms of the shared revenue program, in terms of highway aids, in terms of transit aids, and other big sources of revenue that come from the state of Wisconsin, those are essentially in place until June 30th of next year because of the current two-year budget. But here's the problem. There is a considerable likelihood that because of the state's own revenue shortfalls in areas like sales and income taxes, that state leaders are going to have to go back into the state budget, particularly for the second year of the biennium that starts on July 1st of this year. And we don't know what they're going to have to do, but clearly there is a likelihood of across-the-board cuts or just selective cuts in programs that could severely impact county governments.
Yeah, so state aid is one of the big ones. Some of us have thought, well, you know, it's planned out, so it's going to be stable. But as you mentioned, things are extraordinary. Things are not typical. When it comes to federal aid, Do we have an idea of what we're looking at, or is that also up in the air?
Much is still up in the air. We do know that under the original federal CARES legislation, that the state of Wisconsin was due to receive about $2.3 billion, and that there were specific carve-outs for the three largest local governments in the state, two of which were counties, Dane County and Milwaukee County, as well as the city of Milwaukee. So what is certain is that there are considerable dollar amounts, perhaps as much as $100 million or more for Milwaukee County, for example, that will be available to those three governments. The issue here is that right now it looks like those dollars are heavily restricted. So they are for new costs and added costs that have been incurred directly as a result of the pandemic, but they cannot be used to fill in the gap for these revenue shortfalls that virtually all counties are going to be experiencing, and that certainly our two largest counties are going to be experiencing even more on a proportional basis than other counties. And then, of course, the other huge wild card here is what federal money is going to be available to the state that may be able to preclude the state from having to go back into that two-year state budget and make some changes. And so the CARES Act here, too, provided some initial assistance. I think the huge question mark is that there is discussion on a major new piece of federal legislation that would provide considerable additional dollars for both states and potentially local governments. But right now, that is in the very beginning stages of negotiation on Capitol Hill.
Okay. Yeah, that was actually my next question. So going back into your report, you mention the 0.5% sales tax that some counties levy, and this could have a big impact in some places, at least. How many counties have this tax, and how much revenue does it bring in a place like Milwaukee?
So right now, 68 of the state's 72 counties have availed themselves of the opportunity to levy up to a half-cent countywide sales tax. Interestingly, two of the four that haven't are in southeast Wisconsin, Waukesha County and Racine County. So you really have to take a look across those 68 counties to see what the degree of reliance on sales tax revenues is. It's a low of 2.8% in Florence County to a high of 15.1% in Ozaukee County. But where this is most impactful is in some of the larger counties where even though the percentage might not be up to that 15% level in terms of their reliance, which means the sales tax percentage is a percentage of their overall revenue pie, but these dollar amounts are massive. So in Milwaukee County, the county expects about $80 million in 2020 of sales tax revenue. So even just a 10 to a 15% hit there could be a loss of more than $10 to $12 million of revenue for the county. We have seen Dane County estimate that its potential hit from the COVID-19 decline in sales activity is going to be in the $25 million range. When I spoke to Milwaukee County officials about 10 days ago, they were estimating perhaps as much as $17 million. But this is very fluid, and in all likelihood, that has grown even worse as the impacts of the pandemic continue to linger.
Well, and one of the things that you mention in the report is that, of course, people are still spending money at different places, but one of the big places they're going to is grocery stores, and we don't have taxes on that.
Precisely. So, you know, you think about it. We all know that sales, just as a whole across the board, have obviously declined precipitously because of safer at home restrictions, et cetera. But then you look at two areas where maybe they haven't declined: are grocery sales, where they've actually increased because people are staying at home, and pharmaceuticals. Well, those are two areas that in the state of Wisconsin are exempt from the sales tax. So in the state, those counties and state government that are reliant on sales tax revenues, they're getting hit very hard by declines in sales for retail, sales for bars and restaurants and hotels, but they are not enjoying the benefit of an increase in sales at grocery stores, for example.
Yeah. So when we go back to the different revenue streams that counties have at their disposal, one of the big ones is property taxes. How will property taxes be impacted by this pandemic?
So that's actually a more complicated question than it sounds. But let's start with the fact that property tax levies for 2020 were established by county governments last November or December. Property tax bills were sent out, and a substantial percentage of property tax payments for the 2020 budget year were paid, either in December or in the first of potentially several installments, depending on how each individual county does it, before the pandemic hit. So the good news is that some of this money is already in and won't be impacted. The bad news is that some of this money isn't in. And so the money is clearly owed. But for those property taxpayers who had the ability to pay in installments, now there's a big question mark. How many delinquent payments are there going to be because folks have lost their jobs and are otherwise unable to pay those bills? So there's somewhat of a cash flow issue there. If people are unable to pay, county governments are not going to see these revenues come in per the timing that they were anticipating. The hope is that over the longer term, much of these payments, however, will come in because obviously these are debts that are owed. Now, if foreclosures explode, that's going to have an impact. The other factor here is that where you will see a hit in terms of property taxes is a decline in property values. And we won't even know what that hit is until properties are reassessed later this year and put in place for 2021. Even when counties are putting together their 2021 budgets, those budgets will be based on valuations that occurred as of January 1st, 2020. So what I'm trying to say is that there is going to be a significant lag in terms of diminished property values and how they will impact the ability of local governments to generate property tax revenues. Now, the final very important point is that even if values decrease, local governments do have the ability to increase property tax rates so that they can generate the same amount of property tax levy. That's going to be up to each individual government, whether they're going to be willing to increase these rates if their citizens are hurting financially because of unemployment, because of all of the other factors related to the pandemic. That's a big question mark. But again, here on the relative scale of stable revenues, this is why property taxes tend to be more stable than others.
Yeah. So one of the other things that the report looks at is public service charges. And this is something that's particularly important in Milwaukee County. How have they been impacted?
So there's a whole broad range of service charges, and they're not an insignificant slice of the revenue pie for counties. When we look across the state, they're about 12% of counties' total general revenues. But there's lots of different types of public service charges. So a foremost one is in the area of health and human services. So for those counties that are providing services to people with disabilities or behavioral health issues, there's Medicaid reimbursement involved. There's patient reimbursement if a patient can afford the reimbursement. And so these are considered public service charges. So charges related to health and human services are a big part of that revenue stream. And those ostensibly, if federal and state Medicaid rates remain roughly the same, those should not be impacted very much. There's even a chance they could go up as a result of the pandemic. The service charges that will, however, be impacted severely are those associated with parks and recreational and cultural amenities, real estate transaction fees that are collected by registers of deeds clearly are going to be impacted negatively. And then for a county like Milwaukee County that runs a transit system and an airport, there are going to be significant impacts there. Now, the airport one is trickier because that's a true enterprise fund. And so it's really, there's no property tax levy there. So that hit may be felt most by the airlines that are at General Mitchell International Airport. But still, there's some threat there. On the transit side, without question, transit fares are going to decline precipitously. But the good news there is that there was a specific stream of federal transit aid coming through that federal CARES package that may make Milwaukee County whole for that loss of revenue.
Okay. So I know we don't have a very clear idea of what the future holds for county budgets in general in Wisconsin, but what are some of the themes that we know are to come?
Well, I think some of the real themes of uncertainty, again, are what is going to happen at the federal level, both in trying to stem the huge losses that states are experiencing so that they don't have to cut their aids to local governments, and potentially any direct aid that might go to municipalities and counties. Another huge question mark is, what are the increased expenditure demands going to be? Clearly, to the extent that we have counties that are involved in emergency medical services and a variety of different health and human services, there's going to be greater expenditure needs here. So what dollars might be available to offset those? I think another very big factor is, what was the fiscal condition of each county heading into this crisis, and to what extent do they have reserves or general fund balances that will essentially get them through this for 2020, though I would imagine that for many, 2021 will then be the real concern.
Yeah. Well, Rob Henkin, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Well, thank you, Joy.
Rob Henkin is the president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Since this pandemic began, they have been releasing a lot of different reports, analyzing its impact on Wisconsin. You can find all of their research at wispolicyforum.org. Coming up next, how the changes implemented to protect us from COVID-19 have also impacted those in recovery from addiction. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. COVID-19 has created challenges not only for our healthcare system, but the health of the country. And these immediate and long-term changes pose a big risk to people struggling with addiction. There are a lot of triggering stressors involved with social distancing, like changes to work routines or unemployment, and the overall sense of fear and uncertainty permeating life during this pandemic. This has the potential to dramatically increase the number of people relapsing. So local organizations are working hard to continue to be a resource for people struggling with addiction. To learn more about how recovery efforts are being affected by COVID-19, Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski spoke with Jessica Brownrigg and Aaron Claiborne. They're both recovery coaches with the Wisconsin Recovery Community Organization. Brownrigg starts by explaining how people can stay in recovery after a pandemic and how social distancing has changed the ways people are seeking help.
It's definitely made a shift in our approach. I believe people can still maintain that long-term recovery by offering some creative solutions. I think that we had a really a fast response within many of the local meetings, 12-step meetings here, to launch virtual options. So that's been a huge help to the people in long-term recovery. Mm-hmm. There are also other ways to keep engaged with people. I mean, the biggest thing that helps, I think, someone stay in recovery is helping others or sharing with others. So a lot of times I talk about using the phone list that we get in meetings to connect with people, stay connected with people. I've even said, you know, maybe you guys, people can go through the big books together, do a reading in the morning together, call someone just for a check-in like you normally would do when you're at a meeting, and maybe share your story with them. Again, being really creative in our approach there.
Do you believe there are different challenges for people maintaining a long-term recovery versus someone who has recently started their journey and have not been able to really experience and be integrated into the traditional sobriety journey with in-person meetings? You mentioned readings, you know, lots of things that are part of a system that people willingly participate in.
Well, luckily, we haven't seen many people getting into recovery right now that haven't already had some experience in the rooms. So they're usually, you know, they're ready to get engaged in some way. And so they've been able to access the virtual meetings or a different type of meeting. We have all recovery meetings that's not a 12-step based that they can access there. But I do think that if that presents, it will be a challenge for people. And again, just I think really ensuring that you're trying to keep them connected then with the recovery community in some way, shape, or form.
If there are individuals who are beginning their journey or continuing their journey from a lapse of time. The resources are out there and people have been reaching out as a continuance to their recovery to gain more strength in their recovery. If they had a period of time where they weren't attending meetings, people usually know how to get in contact with some sort of recovery center or AA program. So it hasn't been too big of a challenge from what I've seen, so from what we've seen.
Well, and I think another thing that's interesting is some of the people that I've worked with that are newer are a little shy from going into the rooms. So this is actually something that's a better offer for them because they can just go on a phone and listen in and they don't actually have to participate or feel that they're put on the spot to say something. So that's been kind of interesting to see.
That is. And do you both have any other suggestions or tips of how to help people going through recovery in their day-to-day lives in order to help maintain their sobriety?
That would go along with maintaining a daily schedule. A lot of individuals are unemployed or laid off at this time, and they're trying to find something to do to fill in that void. Things like, reading a morning reflection or meditation, prayer, even small things like making your bed or taking a shower at a scheduled time every day will keep you on track to maintain your sobriety. You know, just getting dressed. Like if you're not going anywhere, when a person gets dressed, they feel good. They look good. And that has a huge impact overall. Exercise is great, as we all know. Get outside, get some fresh air, you know, absorb some sunshine. Maintaining a healthy diet is good as well. And again, the simple things make a huge difference. And also, I think Jessica mentioned, consider daily check-ins with individuals that you go to meetings with. In the recovery community, the acceptance level is extremely high. So to talk to someone who you don't know is not a new thing in the recovery area. So that could initiate some good things.
You mentioned, Aaron, that there's a lot of unemployment. So how does unemployment and psychological distress that obviously a pandemic can have on all of us, you know, whether we're in recovery or not, have you seen an elevated rate of relapse that has been tracked since the pandemic started?
There's definitely been a spike in opioid use and overdoses. One report in Dane County states that there's been a greater number of opioid drug overdoses that there would have been expected in a 7-day period based on Dane County's recent opioid overdose activity. Also in Milwaukee County, opioid use and the opioid overdoses rate is expected to increase up to 50% from 2019 to 2020. This was reported by the Milwaukee County Medical Examiner of Operations Manager Karen Domogowski. With that, for example, with the medicated assistant treatment programs that were shut down for a while, these individuals weren't able to go there and get their Suboxone or buprenorphine or methadone. And because they have this addiction and they're seeking treatment for it, they can't get it. So they turn to illicit street drugs, which has a much more powerful effect. So it sets them back. And that's why some of those numbers are increasing. So they don't want to get any more individuals infected by having people come in to get their treatment because there's that possibility of spreading the COVID if that's an issue. And on the other hand, if they're closed, the individuals can't get their medication and they, like I said before, turn to illicit street drugs. But there's definitely been a spike in overdoses and opioid use, even here in Sheboygan County as well. Initially, in the very beginning, there had been quite a few individuals going to the emergency department due to overdoses. So it's very important, again, to get the word out so we can kind of prevent this and keep those individuals who are seeking help. They feel they have nowhere to go and no one to turn to. We just want to keep pushing the word that the help is there. We're not going anywhere.
So, you know, there's one end of the spectrum where people are running out of money and they're feeling distressed. And then there's the other end where people are getting stimulus checks. And for some people in recovery, that can be a trigger to get all of a sudden a lump sum of money. So I know some of the centers and we've been mindful of trying to talk to people about what we, you know, can we set up a budget for you for when you get that so that it isn't a trigger that you go out and use based off of. So
So what other challenges are you guys facing as people who work in recovery programs? You know, budgeting, once you get your stimulus check, I suppose, isn't something we would normally think about as everyday people. So what else have you had to adapt to besides the obvious move to virtual meetings and things like that? But Aaron, you mentioned people don't have the same access to medications that they rely on. So what has been your plan of action and your way to go about this new reality?
Being a little more proactive with the individuals I work with or potential individuals I work with, I'm constantly contacting different organizations and agencies to see what their protocol is right now. The majority of them are still active, but applications are done online. It's just a change, basically. So I have the information available to individuals who are in need of help. Again, with the meetings, we don't congregate and big crowds, you know, but we will do face-to-face. We'll do a basic screening, you know, are you coughing? Do you feel ill? Have you been anywhere where COVID is at high rate? Do you have a fever? I mean, we take the proper measures. Again, we will never turn anyone away who's seeking help. It's just, we have to take the necessary precautions. The biggest challenge would be those people who like to attend the meetings face to face, and which, again, like Jessica stated earlier, once you get in those meetings virtually, you get that feeling right back as if you were in the room. I don't think there's too much of a struggle that we can't overcome or that we can't initiate a different way.
One of the things too, that some of the people that we work with haven't had access to like a Chromebook or a computer or a smartphone. So that's been a little bit of a challenge, or they're residing in a group home where they don't have access to that. Yeah. So something I've been working with at my job at the county in VistaCare is trying to see if there's any way we could find someone to donate, or if there's extra ones around the office to try to get a Chromebook or a tablet or something to that effect to those people and get them set up on a Zoom meeting. So.
Now, with recovery facilities and emergency treatment measures, how are they being affected by COVID-19? You know, if worse case scenario, someone needed to be admitted, can they still go to these places in an emergency? Or at least in Sheboygan County, I'm sure it differs from each facility.
Interestingly enough, we don't have that many. I don't think we have any residential facilities in Sheboygan County. But I do know that some of them are still admitting people. I know a few of the places in Milwaukee that are residential are still admitting people. I know Lighthouse Recovery Center in Manitowoc, they're a recovery center. They are still seeing people that are in like the first 30 days, or if they're in a crisis, they're still meeting people face to face with the precautions. It's great to see and beautiful thing to see that we're still providing some support and doing everything that we can to keep these people connected and getting them to where they need to be.
Yeah, there's a vast majority of the orgs throughout the state of Wisconsin that are handling this situation primarily the same way as far as the virtual meetings, phone calls, and things like that. But there are organizations that are completely open, completely. They're still doing groups. They're still doing face-to-face. They're still going into the emergency department settings. To be exact, is Darjeune. They are basically business as usual. I spoke with an individual at that org, and they're really out there. They have a huge amount of COVID cases there. I think it's second highest in the state. And that was really surprising to me, and I commended them for, you know, continuing to do the things they do. It's needed. But every org, we're still engaged to the best of our ability.
What can be done in the short term? You mentioned, of course, these tips of staying connected, attending virtual meetings. But what do you feel needs to happen or change in the long run to create a more resilient system that is there for people in recovery and in crisis?
And that is like one of the best questions I've heard, yeah, for that. Sure. And it really got me thinking, Audrey. So thank you for that, because
definitely.
I was like, wow, we need to be on this. So, and some of the things we kind of just brainstormed a little bit on, I think like a morning check-in group via Zoom would be great, because we talked about doing meditations or reflections. So some sort of morning check-in that we could possibly engage with everyone in the recovery community. I know the Jackie Nitschke Center does like a check-in twice a week, I believe, that you can access on their website. So to kind of expand on that. I think it'd be great. Plus, like, to have that through, you know, workout and then maybe a nightly check-in group. So like the morning could be to establish goals or who do you need to reach out to today? And then the evening check-in group would be like a recap and how can we best support you over the night or on the weekends. Another thing that we're working on right now is doing some recovery care packages. That was something we came up with putting some literature in there, some like maybe quotes, hopeful quotes, again, with like a list of resources and phone lists, maybe some candy, some sugar. Yeah. You know, so just, I really appreciate that question. And I think it's something we need to be addressing and talking about now so that we can have better measures in the future.
And those check-ins can be done individually with a coach, certified peer specialist, sponsor, or they can be done in a group. Again, people like those group settings. And, you know, just bring one another some light, you know, some joy, and expressing that through this time of uncertainty that we have some gratitude and we have things to be thankful for. And that care package will be so vital to these individuals who don't feel like they can get the help they need as much as they would have been had we not had this pandemic. And that just shows that we care and we're out there and they have someone they can turn to.
Is there anything else that you guys would like to touch upon or want our listeners to know?
You don't, especially now, you know, I wouldn't say that an individual would travel from county to county to attend a meeting. But since everything is being done virtually, you don't just, you know, limit yourself to the county you live in. We're doing everything virtually. Reach out to any organization that you look up. You know, there's plenty of rooms and plenty of conversations. Recovery is universal. You know, it's not limited to just your area.
Well, and one of the things you mentioned too, I don't know if we touched upon, but was, you know, what would you say to someone who's skeptical about getting on a virtual meeting? And, you know, I was even skeptical at first too, but then I went on and I saw some people, some familiar faces, and it was a beautiful thing. And I've had a few people come on that were skeptical and they got tears to their eyes a little bit because they were like, okay, there's my friends. And it's not the same, but there is some of that energy through that connection, even if it's just seeing that other person on the phone. And another thing is, like he was saying with, you know, reach out to other communities, not just local. And that's what's beautiful about the virtual options too. We were able to work with Mental Health America here in Sheboygan. So they were really great at gathering up a bunch of resources. They developed one that had both local and national ways to reach out to other people in recovery. And then there's a lot of great phone apps that you can put. I think Pink Cloud is one of them. And there's just ways for you to track your triggers or track your, you know, gratitude, track your sobriety times, just stuff like that you can really kick up on to enhance your already recovery system.
All right. Well, Erin Claiborne and Jessica Brownrigg, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me and share this crucial information.
Thank you.
Thank you, Audrey. We greatly appreciate this opportunity. We're just trying to keep the movement going and trying to get it out there as much as possible wherever we can.
Jessica Brownrigg and Erin Claiborne are recovery coaches through Wisconsin Recovery Community Organization, based in Sheboygan. You can find more recovery resources offering virtual options at WUWM.com. Lake Effect will return in just a moment on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Local artists are some of the people most affected by the coronavirus pandemic. With galleries and performance venues closed, there's not a lot of places where art can be shared. But as with all unusual circumstances, they can count on their creativity to get by. To talk about the financial and creative hurdles local artists have had to overcome, Lake Effect's Julian Haida recently spoke with David Lee, the chief executive officer of Imagine MKE, and Deanna Tillish, the president and CEO of UPAF, the United Performing Arts Fund of Milwaukee.
David Lee and Deanna Tillish, thanks so much for joining us on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure to be here.
So, David, let's start with you. I'm curious, as the CEO of Imagine MKE, how have you observed artists, especially independent artists, being affected by the COVID-19 outbreak?
When COVID-19 broke and really became, you know, started really spreading here in Wisconsin, we quickly stood up the MKE Artist Relief Fund to provide small dollar grants to our city's incredible artists and creatives who I think we all recognize we're going to be really affected by the not only the cancellation of live events, but also the closure of bars and venues where they typically work as performers, but also work as service industry folks. And so that, I think, was the initial impulse, right? That like our city's artists and creatives would be hit by this sort of perfect storm of not being able to practice their craft and perform, but also potentially be hit by lost income. And so this experience is really, for us, has really introduced us to, I think, the vast excellence of our city's artists and creatives that I think we always knew, but until you actually read, you know, 500 applications from artists and creatives from every corner of our great county about their practice, where they work, where they perform, and the loss of income due to the virus and due to no fault of their own. I think it really paints a picture of the very rich creative tapestry that we have in our city, but also that our city's artists and creatives are also the people who make our city and county work. They are the ones teaching our kids dance and music and acting. They're the ones taking care of our seniors, doing memory programs with them. They are the ones serving us at bars and restaurants. They're the ones driving Uber and Lyft. These are folks who actually make our city not only inspiring and creative, but also just simply function.
Yeah, that holistic approach is very interesting. So what you're saying is that not only are artists affected because they can't perform in the way they used to, but as is the trajectory for an American artist, many of them are working, like you said, as Uber drivers or waiters, and it's been a double hit. So you're taking that into account with the ways in which you're trying to support artists, correct?
Yeah, so we are the MKE Artist Relief Fund really was like this small dollar grant that's aim was to help artists bridge an incredibly uncertain time, right? Really that time between when things started shutting down and before government programs really came online, you know, as it relates to whether it's unemployment or expanded food share programs or whatever the federal response is, which, you know, I think what's been really lovely or what's been encouraging has been the quick speed at which the federal government has stood up programs to reach independent contractors, which is typically what our artists are, right? I mean, they've historically never been able to qualify for unemployment. And because of the CARES Act, unemployment has been extended to 1099 employees, which, you know, in this time when, you know, the bills keep on coming due, right? It's really important for artists and creatives to be able to have those sorts of resources to ensure that they don't fall behind in this time when they can't perform or can't work.
Yeah, in normal times, artists need a lot of flexibility to be able to do their art, and that flexibility comes with a lot of vulnerability in this time. Deanna, I wanted to ask you about some of the artistic institutions that we all take for granted here in Milwaukee. What are some of the economic impacts that arts groups have faced in the last couple months?
Well, certainly the pandemic has had a significant impact on the 14 groups that we fund. For right now, as the groups are closing out this season, they are projecting an $8.3 million loss in revenue. And that's pretty frightening for them. These are groups that, yes, they do have a defensive interval, but many times it is just a few months to be able to sustain themselves. You're looking at Skylight Music Theater, the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, the Milwaukee Ballet, First Stage Theater, the Milwaukee Rep. These are organizations that are truly staples in our community that add to the vibrancy of southeastern Wisconsin. And right now, they're not working. The stage is dark. And that has a huge impact in terms of employees. Over 500 were either furloughed, laid off, or they had their salaries reduced. But then you look at it from a consumer perspective. They had to cancel totally 509 performances. That impacted over 200,000 patrons who weren't able to go to see a performance. And then you have to look at it from a community perspective, community-wide. Over 65,000 children did not receive in-person arts education programming because of the shutdown. And 80% of those kids are at or below the poverty level. So we know how important arts education is to children and an investment in all of our futures. And right now they're not having that exposure. The other programs that UPATH funds are community outreach based, and that is going into neighborhoods that are underserved, that do not have easy access to the arts. Well, because of the pandemic, 30,000 individuals and families are not receiving neighborhood programming or access to the performing arts. So there's a domino effect here. It's exponential. It is the artists, it is the groups, it is the patrons, it is the children, it is people in neighborhoods who aren't able to come together to experience the arts. And the arts are engaging. They bring us together. They lift our spirits. They nurture our souls. And right now, we aren't getting live performances. But fortunately, there is this thing called technology. And artists are very innovative. And they have acquired the ability to pivot from that live performance that is in a theater to be able to provide live performances virtually.
What's one of the more impressive uses of technology that you've seen, or the most expressive, that maybe could only come out of a coronavirus moment?
One of the more interesting uses of technology that we've seen is we hosted a virtual gallery night earlier in April, and that was really an opportunity to keep the tradition of Milwaukee Gallery Night going, but in a virtual space, right? And so I think about 40 artists showed in a virtual gallery, and people could go into this virtual gallery, look through an artist's portfolio of pieces, buy a piece of art, and that print, if it is for sale for print, would be delivered to your house in a week. And if it were an original, you'd have to figure out how to like coordinate delivery. And, you know, what was really cool about that was that you could actually interact with people in that gallery over the internet, which was really, really exciting. And I think that was, sort of forced our hand in accelerating some partnerships that we'd been developing with some VR providers. I think on the artistic practice side, I think what's been really interesting to me is I've had the opportunity again to read hundreds and hundreds of applications from individual artists of all disciplines and to get to know them a little bit through their proof of practice through this relief fund. And I've been able to see a lot of the work that's already being produced as it relates to COVID-19. And a lot of it is really, really stunning. So I've seen a lot of like graphic artists and visual artists begin to sort of grapple with what the world of physical distancing looks like. Some of the pieces are incredibly stunning. And then just to follow up on Deanna's point about how innovative and how resilient our city's creatives and artists are, there have been so many artists that have sort of utilized this great pause to offer help and mutual aid to their compatriots, right, to their brothers and sisters in arms. There's one artist that I can think of right now who's using her photography and film skills to shoot videos and reels for other artists so that they can maybe get their online sales on or their branding put in order. We've had so many artists generate revenue from their own online sales to the relief fund to help other artists. And so that's just been really, really incredibly inspiring.
Yeah, it sounds like it. If you're just joining us, so you're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM 89.7, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Julian Haida. I'm speaking with David Lee. He's the CEO of Imagine MKE. And Deanna Tillish, she is the president and CEO of UPAF, the United Performing Arts Fund of Milwaukee. We're talking a little bit about how local artists have fared under the coronavirus pandemic. Deanna, I want to ask you a little bit about the ways in which funding for the arts is perceived. I know there was a great debate on the national level with regards to what degree stimulus funding should be spent on arts. What do you tell critics who say that money that is allocated to preserving the arts, supporting artists, would be better spent elsewhere in times like this and in other times? We don't really have a robust arts funding program in this country, and people depend on organizations such as yours, and when the needs are so great medically and otherwise, how do you reply to that?
So when we work with about 185 companies, we go in to do workplace giving campaigns. And when I go and I speak, I typically start by asking questions, and I'll say, well, you know, how many of you have played a musical instrument? How many of you danced at your wedding? How many of you like to sing, be it in the shower or with your church choir? You have to really put it on a personal level so people truly understand that we are all touched by the arts in some capacity. And I think that this time where we are sheltered, I think people will recognize what they want to do is they want to go out and they want to be entertained. They want to cry. They want to laugh. They want to emote through the experience of the arts. And so hopefully there'll be a greater appreciation. But we do get asked those questions. We'll say, I mean, even during this time, we're in the midst of our campaign. We want to raise $12 million. We do not take public funding because there is such a little amount of it in this state. We rank 50th. And so we let the marketplace open up their wallets and give us dollars. Interestingly enough, the individuals have been incredibly responsive to our request for relief that can be provided to our member groups and to our artists. They want to do something. And so it's been fascinating to see how many of our donors have actually been increasing their gifts. Some of our major companies have been doing the exact same thing. And I think part of it is they want to ensure the sustainability of these assets, but they also want to ensure that everyone has exposure to the arts, and particularly when we're going to really need them the most. We actually, this year for our campaign, have a special fund called Casey's Fund, and that is to raise dollars exclusively for accessibility, be it for individuals who are disabled, who have an illness, who have lack of resources. And it's actually named after my daughter, who has profound disabilities, but yet experiences tremendous joy from the arts. She serves as an example, and everyone should have the opportunity to enjoy that. So when you make it, when you take it down to that personal level, then people are much more responsive. But at the same time, there are limited resources. There's, you know, the discretionary income only goes so far. And so it's really incumbent upon organizations like UPAF, like Imagine MKE, which I'm very proud to be a part of, to get the message out there of why the arts, be it arts, culture, visual, performing, what have you, are essential to the economic vitality of this community, and they also are critical to humanity. The more we have opportunities like this to spread the message, the more that message is going to resonate.
If I may just jump in on that point, I think, you know, I want to underscore Deanna's point about how Wisconsin is 50th in the nation in arts funding, public funding for the arts. And that is, you know, we believe at Imagine MKE a problem because, you know, insofar as the value not only for the inspiration and joy and sense-making of our state, that's one thing, right? But the actual sector of the arts and culture sector in our state is together creates about $9.5 billion worth of economic impact. It has more jobs than beer. And that's pretty big, right? And just to drill down to Milwaukee County, our arts and culture groups in Milwaukee County generate $250 million worth of expenditures in the last tax year. That's $225 million of expenditures. And like, this is real money. And as a driver of quality of life, as a driver of talent attraction, as a driver of what makes our region special, it's the groups that UPAF represents. It's the museum by the lake. It's the Milwaukee Public Museum. It's all of these places that we think of as cultural and artistic institutions. And also, by the way, the incredible smaller community arts groups, neighborhood groups, and smaller arts organizations throughout our city. I mean, they make this incredible like tapestry of arts and culture that we, I think, it's almost like air to us, right? And I think in that way, we often forget about how important it is until it's a moment like this, right? When we don't have access. And I think having a really frank conversation about what this arts and culture community means to us, means to our city, and means to the economic well-being and the future competitiveness of our state and region after COVID-19, I think is really, really important.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And thinking of the past and other parts of the world where, you know, perhaps life was exceptionally more difficult than it is now, there was still fantastic art being made in the most difficult of circumstances. And to see that keeps people moving forward and giving them hope is certainly, it speaks to that. So thanks so much for sharing your insights, David Lee and Deanna Tillish.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
That was David Lee, the Chief Executive Officer of Imagine MKE, and Deanna Tillish, the President and CEO of UPAF, also known as the United Performing Arts Fund of Milwaukee. They spoke with Lake Effect's Julian Haida. Tonight, UPAF will be hosting a fundraiser event on Facebook Live, highlighting the work of local performing artists. It's at 7 o'clock, and you can find it if you search United Performing Arts Fund-UPAF on Facebook. And that's today's edition of the show. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for tuning in today. Please join us again tomorrow at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. It's 11 o'clock, and stay tuned. Fresh Air is next.